Our second reading is from Rabbi Baruch Epstein, who was a brilliant Jewish scholar who wrote the Torah Tamima in 1902, which is a very popular book of Torah interpretation in the early 20th century. During the First World War, however, he wrote his memoirs about his family and the family, who were also a number of rabbis, and about his own life. The word Hebrew word mitzvah that appears in this reading is, if you don't know, refers broadly to a good or worthy deed.
We can say that for a young man working on Talmudic analysis for 5 or 6 hours straight can certainly affect his health. And I therefore came upon you at daybreak and told you to go have some tea. And my focus was not on the tea, but rather on the fact that you would have a break. And this too, I believe, that when one rests in order to reach a certain goal, then that rest is as valuable as the goal itself. For the goal of the rest is to add strength and power to the actual pursuing of the goal, whether it be learning or good deeds. And this is the very reason why the rabbis have said that that which leads to a mitzvah is as important as the mitzvah itself. For the mitzvah cannot come about without it. And so we consider the mitzvah and that which led up to it as if it is all one long mitzvah.
As I told the kids, unofficially today is the start of summer. As our numbers show, some of your fellow congregants and our minister Nathan took this very seriously and aren't here today. Yet whether you are away or enjoying a long weekend at home, the start of summer brings with it a different sense of time and energy, and hopefully warmer weather tomorrow. When you think of summer, what do you look forward to? What I look forward to in summer is my beloved Lake Michigan, with its sandy shores, grass-covered dunes, and fresh, sparkling expanses of fresh water. The lakeshore is one of my spiritual touchstones, where I go to relax and replenish my spirit. Recently, I was delighted to learn that Margaret Fuller had traveled around the Great Lakes in 1842, and she recorded this trip in a book, her first book, A Summer on the Lakes. A contemporary and colleague of Ralph Waldo Emerson, Fuller had just spent the prior 2 years leading her infamous Conversations. A leading transcendentalist thinker, Fuller had a lively, literary imagination and a thirst for matters of the spirit. At the time that Fuller traveled around the Great Lakes, Michigan and Illinois were the far west to the civilized east of her native Boston and Cambridge. Her trip both entranced her and disappointed her. One such moment of dismay came when the steamer that she was on was fogged in, and they weren't able to continue on the way to Sault Ste. Marie. But this delay is not what dismayed Fuller. Instead, she looked for possibilities and arranged that the captain would row her to shore where they might explore. They found the ruins of an old English fort, and Fuller collected flowers along the desolate shore. It is this episode that Fuller recounts in the first reading. Her dismay, though, comes when she realized the captain, who had sailed past this spot repeatedly in the course of his duties, had never taken the time to explore the shore or to see what was there just beyond the course of his duties. The quote at the beginning of today's order of service comes from this passage. Men, for the sake of getting a living, forget to live. Of course, Fuller's writing in the 19th century, and I'm taking men to refer inclusively to all of those who earn a living. I, for one, resonate with Fuller's words. Actually, to be honest, I can identify with the nose-down, hard-working captain. Indeed, I value working hard. Over the years, I have held many dreams, jobs, and dreams, from waitressing to mortgage processing to farming. While I have often simply needed to earn a paycheck, I have often been fortunate to earn my living by doing what I love and what I find meaningful, including my work here among you. Too many people in our world, including here in the U.S., find themselves needing to work one or more miserable jobs simply to earn a living. Even when one is able to engage in meaningful work, paid or unpaid, work can become a problem. As many of you know, in addition to working here, I also teach at Boston College, and I continue to be engaged in scholarly research and writing. I work a lot. In fact, I work too much. When I told my partner, Bill, that I was going to be a hypocrite in my sermon on Sunday, he looked at me quizzically. When I explained that I had decided to preach about not working too much and the need to rest, he just laughed. So I speak to you as someone not who lives with graceful ease, but who has often found herself racing to meet deadlines, forgetting to buy milk, and wishing days were 36 hours long at least. Struggling as I do with doing too much, an op-ed in the New York Times a few weeks ago caught my attention. The headline read, "Relax, you'll be more productive." The author, Tony Schwartz, suggests that we all need to rest more, to take breaks of all kinds, from midday naps to four-week vacations. The problem, Schwartz argues, is that as a society, we try to solve problems simply by throwing more time at it. But our time is not unlimited. We simply cannot decide that days should be 36 hours long or that sleeping isn't really necessary. We are bounded by the limits of time. And we are also bounded by the limits of our energy. Because our personal reservoirs of energy are limited. But the difference, Schwartz says, is that energy is renewable. Our reservoirs of energy may run low, but we can take steps to renew and refill those reservoirs of energy. In fact, Schwartz's work and others suggest that taking a break can actually help you become more productive. By taking time to recharge, we can then return to our work with more energy and be more productive. To me, this sounds like great advice. At first, it might seem counterintuitive that by actually working less, you can get more done. But it also reflects the common sense advice to sleep on it or to get a good night's sleep before a big project. But something about Schwartz's article also niggles at me. He seems to be saying that the value of rest lies in its ability to be more productive. In other words, rest is valuable because it helps us to work harder. But does rest and not working have any value of its own? Or is the only value of rest, of taking breaks, the impact on being productive? In the second reading, Rabbi Baruch Epstein allows us to begin thinking about the value of both work and rest. I love the image of this rabbi telling the hardworking young man, "Go have a cup of tea." As Rabbi Epstein explains, It's not about the tea. It's about the need to take a break, to get some rest. Like Swartz, Epstein suggests that the rest might add strength and power to the actual pursuing of the goal. But unlike Swartz, Epstein weighs the need to rest as equal to the need to work. Both the work and the rest adds strength to the work are important. To paraphrase his words, the rest which leads to a good work is as important as the good work itself. For the good work cannot come about without rest. And so we consider the good work and the rest which leads up to it all as one long good work. In other words, our efforts to work and to do good in the world are as important as times of rest, of drinking tea, or recharging our energy in a multitude of ways, through sleep, exercise, good nutrition, as well as through laughter, creativity, and enjoying the company of those we love. I think this is the need that Margaret Fuller was trying to get at in her portrayal of the captain. He was too busy earning the living, trying to be productive, that he forgot to take time to rest, to explore, to live. To describe this narrowing of life to earning a living, Fuller uses the metaphor of a harness. A horse in a harness is ready to be hitched up and put to work. A horse without a harness is at rest. She chides those who cannot shake off their harnesses and engage in something besides work. She suggests that we need to guard against this danger of becoming stuck in our harnesses of work, of being unable to stop, to take a break, to go off the track in our busy lives, and to look around at what else is out there. It is very easy to get stuck in a particular track, a particular productive path to follow as one earns a living. But is this what it means to live? Fuller suggests no. We need to look beyond earning a living, just being productive, and to seek to experience the flowers on the shore, the person with whom we are sharing the journey, and the curiosity of learning about what is beyond our usual track. We need to remember to live. But doesn't life, a full life, include work, whether we are paid for our labor or not? Oftentimes I hear people refer to the work-life balance. This is actually one of my pet peeves, because this idea that you have work over here and life over here seems as if work and life are two separate things. Even Fuller seems to suggest there's earning a living on the one hand and life on the other hand. I do think it is important to listen to Fuller, to consider that life is more than simply earning a living. But I also think that we should include the many hours spent working as part of our conception of life. Life is both our working and our resting. We need work and we need rest. We need vacations and we need a sense of productivity. We need to throw ourselves into a task, and we need to stop and have a cup of tea. We need both, work and rest. Our mitzvahs, our good and worthy deeds, encompass both the striving to do good in the world and the rest that strengthens us for this work. Of course, it's very hard to figure out how to balance all of our multiple responsibilities. Often we have to make hard decisions about how to organize our lives. Sometimes we may disappoint a friend, other times a client, and another time our child. This ongoing process of having to decide how to organize our lives and negotiate these multiple responsibilities and relationships is a deeply spiritual practice. We have to decide what to value and what kinds of promises and commitments we will make. The description of our monthly theme talks about discipline in terms of making promises. I want to suggest that rest is an important spiritual discipline. We need to promise to ourselves to rest. We need to promise to take breaks, to go on vacations, to find the ways in which we best recharge our energy. We need to promise to ourselves to learn how to take off the harness of earning a living and to remember to live beyond our jobs. I need to remember these things too. So I want to end my sermon by joining the children and dreaming about what my summer might look like. What might I explore? What am I looking forward to? And I want to encourage all of the adults to join in using words or pictures to consider how you might promise to rest, to take a break, and to recharge over this holiday weekend or this summer. And I believe the ushers gave you paper as you walked in. And we'll bring some crayons around, or if you have pen. And so Joe's going to play us some nice coloring music. He's very excited about this assignment. We'll see what he comes up with. And just, we'll take a few minutes just to color and to dream and to see what promises we can make about resting. As Joe continues to gently play, I promised the kids that they could bring their pictures and hang them at the front of the church for everybody to see. And if any of the adults want to bring their pictures, what you couldn't see is there is a string with clothespins across the front. So if you want to bring your picture or your list and hang that also, you're invited to do so now as Joe plays for another minute. Also, of course, invited to bring home your drawing for yourself as a reminder. Put it on your refrigerator. As a reminder, as your promise today, to continue to value the importance of rest.